had been with the Chafetz Chaim when the Chafetz Chaim exercised the divot. And the Chafetz Chaim said that it would never happen again because nobody knew how to do it when he passed away. That was it. So he said that it would never happen. So I had heard that directly. Rabbi Sheps. His name was Rabbi Sheps. And it came out it was a fake. It's not a good thing when people fake and scare people. It's not a good thing. So I'm going to start talking. So there's no dibbics. No more dibbics. No more dibbics. Pinchas. Pinchas.
I went to shul. They played. The shul was packed. They played the recording. Right. The shul was talking about it.
About 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
About 30 years ago. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. It was all over the place. It was all over the place. I was in Israel once, and I saw something. There was a rabbi that people claimed was also an exorcist, and I saw what was going on. The person was crazy. He was mental, you know, he was serious mental, you know, emotional issues. It wasn't. Anyway, in this week's Parsha, I'm not talking about Divics. In this week's Parsha, it speaks a lot about leprosy. Mitzvah, about leprosy, which comes from speaking Lashon Hara and other things. But Lashon Hara is a primary way of getting leprosy. We don't have it today. Where it says we don't have it today because everybody would have it. Everybody would be full of leprosy. We can't do that. So it says in the pasuk, but tummy yikare, that the person would scream out, the person who had leprosy would scream out, unclean, unclean. He would scream it out by himself. What was going on? He was publicized, I'm reading this from the Sefer here, that he would publicize his plight in order that people should pray for his recovery. Now, this doesn't mean, I don't want to be misunderstood, that if there are different types of people. There are people like myself that when I'm nauseous, I scream, Adina, I'm nauseous, you got to come and take care of me. You know what I mean? The people like that, that want everybody to, you know, I want to have a neon sign in front of my house that says, Zakatinsky doesn't feel good today. You know what I mean? That's what I want. There are people like that. And then there are people, like people who I know, who they don't want anybody to know. You know? They could be dying. I mean, the truth was that I was really sick this summer. I had 105 fever. I was rushed to the hospital. But a little bit the attention I liked. A little bit. Not going to the hospital. I don't like that part. But you know what I'm talking about. Okay. There are people who go the other way. So I'm not saying, we're not saying, the Gemara is not saying that you should be from the nature that tells people that you're sick. You know? I have a relative right now who's very, very, I mean, really ill. They added a name. Now, in order to add a name, you have to be really, really sick. The concept of adding a name, I'm getting off topic, but it's okay. What's the idea of adding a name? That you get a minion of people, but how does that work? You get a minion of people together in front of a Sefer Torah, and you basically are saying that this person who up to now, his name was Reuven Yoel, right? Ben Sora, let's say. His name is no longer Reuven Yoel Ben Sora. It's now Reuven Chaim Yoel. You know, it's a different person. So if there was a decree that was destined to be on this person, it's no longer the same person. And by the way, I didn't prepare to say this over, so if I'm a little off, I'm off. I think it's, you have to live for 3 months in order for that name to be on your on the gravestone later on in life. So my grandfather's name was, he was born with the name Yaakov. He was hit by a trolley car. That must have been really bad to get hit by a trolley car. It sounds really bad. I think it was like a car or a bus, whatever. And he was very ill in the hospital. They added a name, Chaim Yaakov. Chaim, so he's Chaim Yaakov. And in my family, then my son's name, Avi, is Chaim Abraham. That was one of the names they took. His real name was Chaim Yaakov, not Avi. I'm saying my grandfather, they took that name, and, you know, they added another name. But my grandfather lived till he was in his 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, whatever it might be. So there's such a phenomenon that we do name people. So this specific person who's very ill right now, they added a name. He doesn't want anybody to know about it. So the Gemara is not saying that you have to tell people, but it is saying that people should daven for you. You should let people know at least to daven for them. You wanted to say something.
No, Rav Hinnick also. Over time, he also added a name. It's on his grave.
Yeah, if you like, there's a certain amount of time. But this is not only for davening for a person who's ill. It's being sensitive for people, to daven for people who are having difficulty in general. One of the main things in Judaism is this idea of nosei ba'olim chavera, which means to empathize or to feel the pain of another person and to really deal with it. You have that pain and to take it to the next level of really experiencing it. What do you do with somebody's ill, somebody's poor, somebody doesn't have money? I mean, not having, you know, somebody once made a joke that being poor in America, you still have a car. You know, maybe you don't have to be poor. You don't have to be poor to not have a car. But you know what I'm saying? People have cars in America even if they're broke, right? Yeah, everybody has fancy phones. The world changed, right? The world changed. Nobody doesn't have a toilet. If you met somebody who said, I can't afford plumbing, I have an outhouse. Oh my gosh, in a minute, I think we would make the biggest fundraiser, you know, like, right? I mean, okay, but so first of all,
to these poor people, yeah,
I don't want, listen, in America, when you have people, I hope I don't say anything which is inappropriate, because this is a hard topic. There are people who are homeless. I'm dealing right now with a family someplace in the United States. I'd rather not. I don't want any identifying signs. And they don't have medical insurance. And I keep on saying, I'll help you get the medical insurance. There are people, like in New York City, for example, there are people here that help people get food stamps, welfare. There are organizations that they're dedicated to helping people who are qualified to get it. So how is it possible with that there's still people that don't have it? Again, I'm not judging. Not judging.
They don't want the help.
No, it's not that they don't want. They just don't have the capabilities sometimes. I don't think that they don't want to. So I want to ask her a problem. I know we're going off, but I do that anyway all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I can't help it. Can't help it. One day I went to Rav Palm, who is his sister's grandfather-in-law. Palm was a big tzaddik. Whatever he said he was a big tzaddik. So I went to Rav Palm and I said to him, if you see somebody who is an able-bodied person, and he wants tzedakah, is it right to give a person tzedakah? Able-bodied, you know? So Rav Palm told me, this is really deep. Rav Palm told me that the Chafetz Chaim's son asked the Chafetz Chaim that same question. And the Chafetz Chaim said, I want you to hear this, because I think this affects things, and if you think about it long enough, you get a different perspective on life. The Chafetz Chaim said that if it's decreed upon a person to be, not to have money, then in Shemayim, they could take away his drive to make money. In the United States, if you want a job, you can get a job. That's the reality. If you want a job, go work for Uber. You might not make what you want, but if you want a job in America, by and large, I grew up in middle. I grew up in small town America in Connecticut. My father, as a religious man, as a rabbi, he had a beard and a yarmulke, kept Shabbos. It was very difficult to get a job in the 1960s and 70s. Very hard. But in the year 2024, if you're in New York City and you want a job, you'll get a job. It might not be the best paying job. You might have to work, you know, you might have a boss who's a bastard, you know what I mean? So what's the pshat? If Hashem doesn't want you to make money this year, you know what's going to happen? You're not going to make money. That's what's going to happen. You're going to lose it. You're going to, I mean, there's all sorts of ways how you can lose money, how you can get fired for doing nothing. There's a myriad of things, including not being able to get out of bed in the morning because you're just all depressed and you just can't do it.
But you said something, able-bodied versus able-minded.
It's all the same. No. Rav Palm, I asked about able-bodied, and he said that they could take away your ability to get the job, which means able-minded. You could become, unfortunately, depressed, you know? Or you could go and say stupid things at an interview, or not be willing to take the interview, or not dress properly at the interview. There's so many things you could do wrong, you know, if that's what the master wants. Okay, let's go further here. But this concept of feeling for another person, listen to this. This is, I feel bad talking about dentists. Can't help it. Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, you know who he was, right? He was Rosh Shiva of the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He was in a dentist's office in Jerusalem, and he heard a patient who was having his tooth extracted groaning. You know, okay, so I don't want to look at the dentist, but you know, some dentists are cheap and they don't want to give enough Novocaine. You know what I'm talking about? And in the middle, you're saying to yourself, can't you just give me a little more, just a drop more? We got to be so cheap, I'll pay 10% more. Just shoot me up already. No, so the guy was groaning. So Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, he got up and he started davening. He just started davening for the person that he should have it easier. You have to feel for people, you know? You have to. I mean, you're in the hospital. I think that you can't blame anybody, but sometimes doctors get desensitized. You can't blame anybody for that. You have to become a little desensitized, but there's different levels of desensitivity. When my father was at the end of his life, my father was in a coma for 11 months. He had a number of bad strokes, and then he was in a coma. So I'll never forget, on a Friday, he died on a Tuesday. The Friday before, he had a very fine, just move over a drop, okay? This one to the left. Beautiful, beautiful. He had a very, very nice cardiologist. The cardiologist called me up and he said to me, your father has deteriorated. I remember him saying these words. He's deteriorated. And there's not much more room for him to deteriorate further. Right? That was as nice, that was as nice and sensitive as you could put it. Sunday morning, I was down in the hospital, I was in Booth, and I meet these two doctors, and one doctor says, listen, your father's dying today. Yeah. I said to him, are you sure? He said, yeah, he's dying today. I said, how do you know? He said, I know. Not in a day, you know? He didn't. He lived three more days. But it was just the, you know what I mean? Like, somewhere between the arrogance and just like, you know, wake up, boy. He's dying today, you know? Sensitivity. Gotta be sensitive. Gotta be sensitive to people.
So it's how you say it, not what you say.
Yeah. You know? It's all like that. I'm gonna tell you an amazing story. Because I'm in the mood for stories, because Purim is, Pesach is story time. This story my son said over in Shul 2 weeks ago, last week. So if you heard this story last week, we're going to say it over. It's worthwhile. It is a major, amazing story. Just amazing. There was a big Talmud Chacham in this neighborhood. Actually, in Kew Gardens. His name was Reb Zelig Epstein. He had a yeshiva called Shar Torah. To get perspective of how big a person he was, I'll tell you three things about him, and then we'll get to the story. First of all, when Art Scroll, there was a big machlokas argument about Art Scroll, whether it should go forward with Gemara, the translations and the commentaries on the Art Scroll. On one side, because the translation is so well done, and it's so easy for people, if they want to gain the knowledge of the Talmud, which is basically closed to all of us because we don't speak Aramaic. There's only one place in the world where people speak Aramaic. That's Northeast Kurdistan. They speak Aramaic over there. But most of us are not from Kurdistan. You're not from Kurdistan. I met some people from there. That's what they speak. They say, you know, Yasafra Tova, instead of saying good morning. You know, that's what they do, you know, Northeast Kurdistan. Anyway, so on one side, it opens up the volumes of Talmud to everybody, including myself. That's what I use all day. On the other side, it is a crutch. It is a crutch because you got the English on the side. Yeah? So is this a good idea to create, to do or not? So you had rabbis that were on one side that said, of course. And then you had those who were opposed to it because scholarship will go down. And also the involvement and the work on Melech Batar is not going to be there as much because you don't, you know, it's pretty easy. It's still hard. I don't want to mislead and think that it's a cinch when you have Art Scroll, because it's not true. Anyway, Reb Zelig flew to Israel to convince Reb Shach that it should be done. And Reb Shach listened to Reb Zelig. And that's why Art Scroll came into existence. That's a pretty big picture. Bill Clinton heard about Rabbi Zelig Epstein. And he brought him down to Washington. He wanted to meet him. That's pretty big. Why? Why? Because because Bill Clinton had a roommate who lived in this neighborhood. His name was Aaron Kindelier. And he was his roommate in Yale. And he told me that Bill was a nice guy. He was a nice guy. He was a little bit, you know, interested in the women folk. But but he was, you know.
Sounds like a typical.
You know, but he was known as a nice person. And apparently he heard that Reb Zelig was a big man, very, very brilliant, big rabbi, and he wanted to meet him. I believe he went to Washington. I don't think that Clinton came to meet him here, but maybe I'm mistaken. So there's an amazing story about Reb Zelig. The story goes that Reb Zelig learned in Tar V'Das. He was in Tar V'Das. And he was a rav in Tar V'Das. And it was Erev Yom Kippur. How many people know this story? Nobody knows the story?
I think so.
It's an amazing story. It was Erev Yom Kippur. Go back into the 1960s. That's part of this. Well, you don't know what the 60s was like, but in the world of where people went by buses, public transportation, not like today. And Erev Yom Kippur. Reb Zelig was on his way to go to Tar V'Das for Kol Nidre. Now there was a woman who went through the Holocaust, and her husband, because of all the terrible, terrible atrocities that he had experienced in the Holocaust, he killed himself. So this woman now, who's a Holocaust survivor, which by itself should be enough to wipe out, I mean, it's an amazing pain. Her husband kills himself. That's like double pain, right? I mean, more, you know, anybody's suicide, but on top, death is one thing. Suicide is worse. But this is after the torment of the Holocaust. She had a few children, or at least one child. That's all that matters. And Reb Zelig had heard that her child, it must have been her only child, probably, but whatever, had just died from cancer, Erev Yom Kippur, and this woman was in the halachic status of an onen. An onen is the most serious, deep stage of mourning. You start off with onen. God forbid, nobody should know about this, but just a quick review. Onen is from the time you hear the person dies until the time of burial. Okay? Or in Israel, if a person's going to Israel, until you get on the airplane. But that until the body gets on the airplane. But that's the most severe time. And because you're so deep in mourning, you're not obligated to do any positive mitzvot. You can't do negative commandments. So you can't go and have a cheeseburger. But when you eat, you're not allowed to make a bracha. You're not allowed to. It's not a matter that you have a choice. You can't be included for a minyan. So if a person is on an airplane going to Israel, and there's 9 people on the plane because they want to daven, right? And you're the only person, ain't no minyan, because you're not able to be included. Because you're so deeply not. It could be that one person is not like that emotionally. They have different emotions, whatever. But the Torah tells us that that's what an onen is. It's the most serious, you know, position and mourning that you can have. So Rav Zelig Epstein hears that this woman is an onen going into Yom Kippur, and he decides that he's not going to go to shul. He is not going to go to, what's it called, to Kol Nidre. We have the Yapchik for you. It's over there. Got Yapchikles. Yes, I don't know what it is. It's something. So Rav Zelig decides that more important than for him to go, I want you to hear this. This is really a deep issue. More important than for him to go and daven on Yom Kippur in Torah Adas with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and other great people, more important is for him to spend his Yom Kippur with this lady who's by herself so that, God forbid, she doesn't do anything stupid, you know, like kill herself or hurt herself. So he decides that that's what he's going to do. But then he starts thinking it's going to take him to walk to this woman's house. You know, if it's 2 miles away, that's another hour of walking, let's say. Whatever the time period was, he said to himself, for me to walk there, maybe she'll get depressed during that time period. So he decided that he's going to go into Torah Adas, because he was right there, and he's going to ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was the leader of the Jewish people at that time in New York, for sure, whether he should take a bus on Yom Kippur to be with this lady. So he walks in, and they're in the middle of Shmona Esrei for Kol Nidre. Even Kol Nidre. He tells Rav Yaakov, and Rav Yaakov points to money. See, today we don't go by buses, and if we would go by bus, we have a ticket. We have a metro pass or whatever. But in those days, it wasn't like that. You had to bring your quarters with you, and you had to, because there was no change, whatever. So Rav Yaakov, before Rosh Yom Kippur, had his money put aside, you know, in the corner to take the bus back home. And Rav Yaakov said that he should take his money and go on the bus. And you have to understand, you're talking about a big rabbi. He's going on a bus on Yom Kippur to visit this lady because who knows the pain that she's going through? That's, to me, unbelievable. That's the end of that story. It's unbelievable. It has to do with feeling the pain of another person. Another story of that nature. Yeah, how many people have ever heard of the Divrei Chaim? Yeah, the sons of Rav. The Divrei Chaim. It's a famous story about the Divrei Chaim, which is, I mean, it's all over. But it just goes to, it's amazing, you know. You know the story with the clothes, the priest's clothes? Okay. So there's such an idea in Kabbalah, such an idea. You all know about this. That if a person is a perfect tzaddik, the body doesn't decompose, right? Everybody knows about that, right? We all know about that. Story goes that post World War I, in Polish Russia, they needed to move a because they needed to make a highway, they had to move a cemetery. They open up a cemetery, and there's a full body of this guy, and the guy is wearing the clothing of a priest. You know, the
Jewish cemetery.
I don't know where it's called. What?
You mean the Jewish cemetery?
He's Jewish. No, he's in a Jewish cemetery, but he's buried instead of in Tachrichim. He's wearing, I don't know what it's called. Not a crucifix. Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
The collar.
But the collar. He's wearing the collar, but he's also wearing the long frock. He's got the whole thing going, you know. But his body is not decomposed. So they did a little investigation, and they found out what the story was. The Divrei Chaim, the first sons of Rebbe, was going, you know, he used to travel. All the Rebbes used to travel. And he came to the town, and he said that he smelled the smell of Gan Eden. And then he followed that smell, whatever that means. I don't know what it means, but whatever it means, he followed that smell and he came to a certain house. He knocked on the door of the house and he follows it into the house. He tells the owner of the house, the proprietor of the house, that he smells Gan Eden. This is the sons of Rebbe. Divrei Chaim was massive. Massive tzaddik, we've never met anybody like this. The Rav, he smells that's coming out of the closet. He goes and he says to the owner, what's in the closet? And the owner says that he tells him over this story. Story was that this man was the Gabbai tzedakah. He used to collect tzedakah in the community. And somebody came to him and asked, you know, said they need money. So he went around collecting money. That's what they did. And then another person came and said that they needed money, and the Gabbai with his, he went to the wealthy people, the community, and raised the money. Then a woman came and she gave this whole sob story that she really needed the money. Otherwise, she needed medicine. It doesn't really matter what it was, but it was something. And this Gabbai Tzedakah said, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I went three times. I want to tell you, as a person that has to raise money, it's very hard. Okay, it's hard to raise money anyway. It's hard to ask people for money anyway. It's much easier. I call people up on the phone. Most of you don't realize this, but I very, very seldom ask people directly for money in their face. I usually do it on the phone because this way, if you're not up to it, you know what I mean? I hear you. Less embarrassment. It's harder for everybody. Okay. But you want to make a separation between when you call them. If you called somebody up for the fundraiser, which we just had a month ago, you really don't want to call them up again this week, which is a month away, you know, a month later, and say, you know, we really need money for the electric bill. You don't really want to do that. Maybe you have to do it, so you do it. But you really don't want to call up again for Lag BaOmer, right? Because you just did it two times. Now imagine you're doing it the same day. You don't want to do that. This guy didn't want to do it. But then he said to the woman, okay, if it's really, you really need the money, I'll do it. So he went from place to place and he's not getting anywhere. Because again, it's really hard. And by the way, people will say, I just gave you money, you know, or they won't say it to you directly. But, you know, I've had rumors of people saying that Hashivenu collects too often. I'm very careful about it. But still, that's the way people are. You got to be careful. He's going around, he's not getting anywhere. So he finally came up with an idea. There was this one guy in the community who was a very wealthy guy, but he was it's not a prankster. I don't know what it's called. That if you go to him and you want him to do something, he'll give you the money, but you got to, it's got to be like jackass, you know, he's going to do something. That, you know what I mean? You gotta work for your money. He's gonna want you to do something. So he goes to this guy who was in a bar and he was half drunk. And he says, I need money for this woman, this Jewish woman. And the guy says, yeah, no problem. I'll give you all the money. I just want one thing. I want you to make a parade. You're going to walk through the city, the little town, and you're going to wear the clothing of a priest. And I have that priest outfit. I want you to do that. In our world, where we live, people would just say the guy's a little crazy, or what's he doing? Is it Halloween? Is there some kind of party today? Whatever. Because we don't really care about how we look. But if you ever dealt with European Jews, they care a lot. They care a lot. You don't talk about look, being Hamish and dressing appropriately. How many people know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about. There's such a thing. Such a thing. I thank God I didn't grow up in that environment, but there's such a thing. This guy took so much abuse. This gabbai took so much abuse because he put on the priest's clothing. He walked through the town, and this wealthy guy, he got a little band, you know, to make this parade. It was terrible. After he did this, and he took all this abuse, and people cursed him out and said, you're a gabbai, you're an idiot, you know, whatever. He took the clothing that he was wearing, and he threw it into the closet. When the sons of Rava came, and he smelled, and then he took out the clothing, and he said, this is, tell me what happened with these clothing. And this man told him the whole story. The sons of Rav said, Divrei Chaim said, when you die, you should put into your will that you should be buried in those clothing, because the angel of death cannot hurt you when you were in that clothes because of what you did, how you cared about these other Jewish people, this woman, nothing can hurt you. And that's what happened. It's a big thing. You have to be sensitive. I'm just going to end with one more story, and then we'll end the night. It's short, but this is Reb Aryeh Levin. It's such a beautiful story that we have to, when we're dealing with people, we really have to think about this. So there was Reb Aryeh Levin was a tzaddik of Jerusalem. He was a tremendous tzaddik. We're just going to leave it like that for the moment. Another time we can get more detailed. There was a store in Jerusalem that did not refuse to close up on Shabbos. They refused to close. If you know anything about Israelis, Israelis can get more stubborn every day. The more that the Haredim picked, you know, had demonstrations to close Shabbos, you know, the more they did that, the more this store said open, you know, that's what they did. It's not working. One day it's Erev Shabbos, and Reb Aryeh Levin was an old man at the time, and he went to the mikveh and he got himself dressed for Shabbos. And he walked into it was a hardware store. He walked in and he asked the owner if it would be okay for him to sit next to the cash register. We'll just sit there. So the owner of the store said, why, you know, you want to sit there? You know, knock your head out, so to speak. You know, like, you want to sit? He sits there for a couple hours. It's a couple hours before Shabbos. And then in Jerusalem, as you know, they blow they have the siren. There's two of them. The first one tells you to get ready, right? When the siren goes off, Reb Aryeh Levin got up and he started to leave, and he sees the proprietor and he says, have a good Shabbos, and starts walking out. The owner of the store runs after the proprietor, runs out and says, I don't understand why. So why were you here? He was there for hours. Well, why were you here? So Reb Aryeh Levin said that, I know that your store is open on Shabbos. And I know that people are harassing you, you know, they're begging you not to. It must be a tremendous test for you to keep your store closed on Shabbos. And he said, I really didn't understand what the big test was to close the door on Shabbos, the store on Shabbos. So I decided, so that I could understand what you're going through, I'm going to sit, I'm going to watch the customers come in so I can feel a little bit of what you're going through. And then he said to the owner of the store, and I see you have a lot of business on Friday, and it really is a big test for you. At that moment, the owner of the store said, Everybody was worried about Shabbos. But nobody was worried about me and what I was going through. And because you were worried about what I was going through and how hard it was for me, I'll close Shabbos. I'll close the store for you because of that. We see people going through things and we wonder, like, what are they doing? You know, what are they doing? We have to understand that everybody's in a different place. People have different tests, you know, different situations. You have to be sensitive to them to understand that from your side, it looks one way. But from the other side, they're going through different trials and different tribulations. Before I came here tonight, I was dealing with two people, a couple and a person. And each one was crazy. Don't look at the videos. You won't know who it is, but they're crazy. I mean, they were, the couple was killing each other. And I'm listening to what they're fighting about. Yeah, what really is going on is that money is tight. It's Erev Pesach. Thousands and thousands of dollars to buy matzah. That's not true, but matzahs, everything's expensive. Everything is so freaking expensive. So much work. And the women make it very hard on themselves. You know, there's really nothing here to clean, right? Anybody see any bread on the floor here? You know that the women would clean this up 50 times. In Europe, they used to paint the house. Now, why did they paint the house? What does that have to do with chalitz? I have no clue. But they used to paint the house. My wife, last week, we went through my drawers, and I got rid of all the old socks from 20 years. There's a lot of chametz in the drawers. My socks are known to be full of Milky Ways, because everybody knows that when you put on your sock, you should have, one foot should have Milky Ways, and the other one should have Three Musketeers. And at the end of the day, you figure out which one has a better flavor, right? No, nobody has any chametz in the socks drawer, but that's what you do. So there's a lot of pressure, money, oh my gosh, cleaning. Maybe Sephardic women don't clean. I got it the first time. I got to tell you something, crazy, crazy thing. You're not going to believe this because you didn't grow up with this. I didn't grow up with this either. In Connecticut, we had a thing called orange juice. It was in a container, and it said kosher for Passover. I came to New York, and I saw these people that they were squeezing oranges. They were squeezing oranges. They'd buy cases of oranges, and they would squeeze them because maybe there was chametz. Well, chametz is there. If it's kosher Pesach on the orange juice container, it's crazy. But that's what they did. My wife, when I first got married, there was nothing that they bought that was processed. I ruined the family because they wanted to make me happy. So I started off with ketchup. You need ketchup and you need Diet Coke. Staples, right? That's what you need, you know? Pesach is very hard. There's a lot of pressure. You got to feel for the other side because they're acting crazy. They're acting crazy. Anybody come to you to ask you to take off their braces or to take out the fillings? I'm being serious right now.
No, but kosher dentures.
Koshering dentures?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Blow torch.
You're ruining
it. So supposedly you keep it in water for 24 hours.
No.
But according to what's his name, Rabbi Lewin Krantzlovichal.
He's not.
You soak it for 24 hours, and that was it, because I remember my grandparents.
What happens if you soak it for 24 hours?
Soaking is fine.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
People would boil them in a pot.
Boil them. And then put it in your mouth while it's still hot.
You can't, then. It's not going to
turn it off. Turn it off.
It won't fit anymore.
What?
It won't fit anymore.